Manuscript Releases, Volume 6, Numbers 347 to 418. MR Number 368, The Pioneers and Personal Sacrifice. I was shown while at Lancaster, Massachusetts, that the work of God was progressing in the West, and that you must be narrowing down your large farms. Do not talk your faith. Sell that ye have and give alms, says the angel. Not moving fast enough, said the angel. Cut loose from your treasures here, lay up a treasure in heaven. Tell Brother John. I sent a letter to Mary, and there was something in it I wished you to see, so I sent it to you. There was $2 in it, a little present I sent her. Did you receive it? We know how our cause started. We know that we have counted pennies and means in every way in order that we might have enough means for the bare necessaries of life and to carry us from place to place, to present the truth to others. I well remember the first conference that was ever held by our people. It was in Connecticut, 1848. My husband worked at cutting cordwood at 25 cents a cord to earn money to take us to this meeting. He was not accustomed to this kind of labor, and the rheumatism came in his wrist. He was unable to sleep nights, and night after night our prayers ascended that God would relieve him of pain. He said, "Wife, we must keep $5 on hand, and even if we get short of food, we must not use that." I fainted to the floor, with a nursing child in my arms more than once for the want of necessary food to eat. But when the call came from a few faithful souls, "Cannot you come and hold a meeting with us in Connecticut?" we felt the Lord would have us go. When my husband settled with his employer, he had $10. With this, we made the journey. Urgent invitations came from New York for us to hold a series of meetings among them. What could we do? We had no means. We were poor. We prayed over the matter, and my husband decided to buy a scythe and go into the harvest field and earn money for to take us to New York. He was an invalid, could not retain food upon his stomach, but we prayed over the matter, morning and night, and he was strengthened. He worked thus until he earned $40, which paid our fare to New York. I was shown at that time that light was shining out from my husband's pen, and these rays of light were penetrating the darkness of error, and the beams of light were increasing and growing brighter and more powerful. It was at this meeting that the truth began to spread in New York. My husband worked at handling stone for months until his fingers were worn through and dropped blood, and this, too, was the very place where he had stood in the desk before thousands of people to proclaim the coming of Christ. Through injustice of his employer, he did not receive the money for his labor, and we were in want. He obtained a few things for our absolute necessities. My husband went through the streets of Brunswick, Maine, with a bag upon his shoulder in which were a few beans and a little meal and rice and flour to keep us from starvation. When he entered the house singing, "I am a pilgrim, and I am a stranger," I said, "Has it come to this? Has God forgotten us? Are we reduced to this?" He lifted his hand and said, "Hush, the Lord has not forsaken us. He gives us enough for our present wants." Jesus fared no better. I was so worn that as he said this, I fainted from the chair. The next day a letter came asking us to go to another conference. We had no money. When my husband went to the post office for his mail, he found a letter containing $5. When he returned, he gathered the family together and offered a prayer of thanksgiving. This is the way the work began. At one time, light came that we should go to Portsmouth, but we had no money. We got all ready and were waiting when a man came riding very fast to our door. Jumping from his wagon, he said, "There is somebody here that wants money. I have come 14 miles at the highest speed that my horse would go." Said my husband, "We are all ready to start to attend an important meeting, but we're waiting for money. We shall not have time to catch the cars now unless you take us." He did so, and we had just time to reach the cars, step upon the platform without purchasing tickets, when the car started. This was the way the Lord educated us to trust in Him. In this way, the truth has entered many places. Our faith and trust in God has been tested and tried again and again. For years, we labored constantly to carry forward the work under the pressure of feebleness and great poverty. We have tried to the best of our ability to save means in every way possible that the work of God might go forward. I had about the time of Brother Erzenberger's visit to America a present of a nice silk dress which cost $45. Brother Andrews had just sent word that there was a great need of money to carry forward the work. I thought it was my privilege to so use the gift I had received that those who generously presented it to me would receive a reward and lay up treasure in heaven. I went to a merchant and told him to sell it for me for all he could get. He sold it for $50, and I sent the money to this mission. When others knew what I had done, they donated much larger sums. Thus, the act of my doing this little brought in the means from other individuals, so that Brother Andrews wrote us that the very sum needed came at the right time, and he expressed gratitude to God for this timely response. I have lain awake night after night, turning over in my mind how we could help the different missions in the best way, and I am in just as much perplexity now as before. I can see no other way but to pray, believe, and act as God gives us wisdom. The Lord has gold and silver. The earth and all its treasures belong to Him. The cattle upon 1,000 hills are His also. If we trust in Him, exercising living faith, He will send help to advance His work. He has always proved Himself a prayer-hearing and a prayer-answering God. I often think of the facilities you have in America in rich abundance, and how bound about we are here, for want of money and for want of consecrated workers. If those who have so great light would walk in the light, all needless expenditures in dress, in houses, in furniture, in picture-taking, would cease. There would be decided reformation in these matters, and thousands of dollars that are now spent to foster pride and selfishness would flow into the treasury to spread the gospel in foreign lands. But where is the self-denial for Christ's sake? A good work is begun in Melbourne, and the work is only started. Men and means is our cry. As far as possible, we are educating the workers to make the work self-sustaining by their contributions and by the practice of strict economy. This we present by our own practice. Not a piece of furniture is purchased merely for appearance. We buy at auction odd pieces of furniture, not seeking to have the pieces harmonize if they will answer the purpose. If they are odds and ends, defaced and worn, we touch them up with stain and varnish, which costs but little. We are determined to maintain the principle that we are pilgrims and strangers, and we are soon to move from this country to a better country, even and heavenly. Brother Starr came from a sale of goods a few days ago. He said, "I did so want to purchase a wardrobe, a beautiful piece of furniture, with mirror in front, that went for less than £4 when it must have cost 10. But I remembered we are pilgrims and strangers, and decided not to buy it." I said, "You did right. I do not want even the appearance of costly furniture in my house, for it would contrast strangely with the other articles." He bought 2 plain, old-fashioned little bureaus for me, one costing 5, the other $3, and a second-hand washstand for himself for a small sum. This is the way we have worked. We are getting everything for durability, things that will bear rough handling and transporting from place to place, and not break and crush to pieces. We have been and still are very hard-pressed for means. The Lord sees it all. He will not leave us in destitution, although in strait places. The $1,000 which you say is forthcoming will supply our present necessities and keep the machinery moving. We purchased 1/2 box of the lemon oranges at 4 cents per dozen. I call them superior. And then we returned home without our 2 cases of oranges. The oranges are excellent here and are about 80 cents per bushel in American money. In Parramatta, in the markets on Tuesdays and Fridays, the fruit growers sell their fruit at auction sale. We purchased oranges at 9 pence a bushel last market day. That is about 18 cents in American money, but the fruit is not first class. The cheapness of all the products of farms and orchards will explain why there is so much poverty in this country. Farmers do not receive enough for their produce to pay their expenses in raising it. Cauliflower is bought for a mere song. We have purchased large bags full for 8 and 10 cents. We purchase a large amount and feed it to the cow and horses. We are now expressing juice from the oranges and canning the same. We have pressed out the juice from the lemons also, in order that we may furnish palatable drink for hot weather. 2 years ago, I purchased a horse for $40. She was a good-looking gray horse, but was very poor, and for a time, it was a question as to whether or not I should give her away or what I would do with her. But kind treatment and plenty of good feed have brought her up both in flesh and spirits. She has paid her way in 1 year. At one conference, she transported our ministers from Prahan to North Fitzroy and thus saved the conference $25 in car fare. When I went to New Zealand, the school needed her, and she served them well. When I returned, she was in good condition. She is a perfectly safe animal, frightened at nothing, and is not up to any mean tricks. We transported her to New South Wales. She has had an attack of rheumatism, and for weeks we have been unable to use her. Your Uncle Belden went to the stockyard sale in Sydney, and from a herd of wild horses, selected a horse for me for which he paid £5, $25. I paid £3 for breaking the horse. So I have now a 3-year-old colt, which I put by the side of Maggie, and so have a nice team to draw my phaeton. We are nearing the end of time, and it is most essential that we walk humbly with God. We cannot fit up the building with carpets or enter into any preparation that requires outlay of means, for we have none. I have been constantly handing out means, investing thousands of dollars to keep the work moving, but I know that we must heed the instruction given me in Melbourne to study economy in every line. Christ said of the scribes and Pharisees, "Ye do err, not knowing the Scriptures, nor the power of God." These both let us learn in the school of Christ. We must make the Scriptures our counselor, and be doers of the word if we would have a knowledge of the power of God. Our desires will have to be bound about. We are of necessity obliged to plan and devise and economize. We cannot manage as if we had a bank on which to draw in case of emergency. Therefore, we must not get into straitened places. I am glad that Brother and Sister Haskell, in their experience, have learned that there is a limit to means, and while we would be pleased to have many things that we have not in our school building, we must look at the old furniture, the bureaus, tables, washstands, and other articles and say, we must make them do. 136, 1897, 10, 11. Principles of Education for Avondale, December 21, 1897. The time has come for those who have a large amount of means invested in houses and lands to begin to dispose of their possessions. Sell that ye have, and give alms. Provide yourselves bags which wax not old, a treasure in the heavens that faileth not, where no thief approacheth, neither moth corrupteth. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. My brethren and sisters in the faith of Christ's soon coming, I ask you how it will be with you when you stand before the great white throne to answer for the talents he has entrusted to you. If you hoard your money, if you invest it in houses and costly furniture, how can you meet your Lord in peace? Your heart will be where your treasure is. Brethren and sisters, now is our time to make haste to do something. Will you now give of your means to advance the work in the South? If you have in your possession houses and lands that you do not need, will you sell them and invest the means thus obtained in more firmly establishing the various lines of work that have been begun in the southern field? 72, 1902, pages 3, 4, 8. To our churches in America, typed May 18, 1902. Proofreaders in the office receive their wages. Those who are working at housework receive their wages, $2.50 and $3 a week. This I have had to pay and others have to pay. But ministers' wives who carry a tremendous responsibility, some of them devoting their entire time, have nothing for their labor. 137, 1898, pages 9, 10. To Brethren Irwin, Evans, Smith, and Jones, April 21, 1898. I am deeply interested in you and your family. I have a message for you from the Lord. You are in danger, as some others have been, of depending on appearance to create an influence in your favor. My brother, you should dress becomingly, and you should have a comfortable home. But you are never to forget the lessons of self-denial taught by the great teacher. In the night season, I was listening to words spoken to you by one who never errs. He looked about the rooms of your house, and speaking very solemnly and with great earnestness, he said, "These furnishings are expensive. Much might have been saved by purchasing something not so rich or costly. These things will not increase your influence for good. You should have in your home all that is necessary for the preservation of health, but much less expensive furniture would indicate a desire to be in harmony with the faith of the Bible. Do not think that in order to have influence, you must put on an appearance of influence and wealth. Thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place, with him also that is of a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble, and to revive the heart of the contrite ones." You cannot be in sympathy with Christ unless your practice is in harmony with his teaching. Do not strive to emulate worldlings by following inclination in making purchases for your home, when money is so much needed in the cause of God for the saving of perishing souls. You see this need, and it hurts you to think that you have not money to give to the Lord. Do you not see that you would have more to give if you practiced economy in your home? You are too self-indulgent. Deny yourself, take up the cross, and follow more closely in the Savior's footsteps. Before you spend money, ask yourself, "Can I not save this money? I will deny myself for Christ's sake. He gave his life to purchase eternal life for me. I must imitate his self-denial. It was by the sacrifice of himself that the Savior placed at my disposal the riches of his grace. He was under no compulsion, no obligation to give me his favor. Had he withheld all from me, it would have been no more than I deserved. Temptations will come to you to indulge selfish desires. Yield not to them. Restrain your inclination for expensive clothes and rich furniture. Do not suppose, as you associate with wealthy men, that you are at liberty to spend money freely. It is not dress or houses or lands that measures your worth. Your highest recommendation will be in doing just as Christ did. Study his life. Seek for his grace. All the wealth you could obtain would never bring back the health you have lost through self-indulgence. At present, I am very short of funds. I have no money in the bank. In fact, I have overdrawn my account there. I hope that some money will come in soon. I think I shall bend my energies toward getting out some new books until things become more settled. Then we shall better understand what we ought to do in regard to getting out a new edition of Patriarchs and Prophets. God has said that the southern field is to be worked. In the very midst of us there are those who know not God. Their ignorance cries out against those who spend their money in building elegant mansions or in erecting costly monuments over the dead. What help are these monuments to the dead or to the living? What honor do they bring to God? The cries of souls hungry for spiritual food are ascending to God. Released April 16, 1974.